Welcome to Allison's Wonderland. I'm your host, Allison Packard. Join us as we journey through the looking glass and down the rabbit hole into the wild and wonderful world of animation and video games. Hey, do a girl a favor and please subscribe to this podcast and go on iTunes and leave us a good review. If you like the show, please help spread the word. It really helps us to get heard by more people. Thanks so much. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Allison's Wonderland, the show that takes you inside the world of animation and video games. And today our guest is the one and only Tyler Rhodes. Tyler Rhodes is both an animation voice actor as well as voice director, a multi-hyphenate talent, and one that has worked on some of your favorite games, TV shows, and so much more. So we're going to deep dive into Tyler's career today. Woo. Welcome, Tyler.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
I'm so glad you're here. Yeah. I've known you for a couple years now.
I think
we got to work together
right
on the Bethesda game Redfall
game.
Yep, but just one day.
Right.
And I loved working with you.
Thank you so much.
I thought you were such a great director.
I had a blast too.
And you know, I mean, as actors, as you know, we work with all different kinds of directors across the board, and everybody's got like a different style, but you were really, I would say, an actor's director.
I love to hear that. That's what, that, I mean, you know, you mentioned I do a little bit of both, and my background is as an actor, background in theater. Mm-hmm. I really come from a performance background. And so when I started getting into directing, it really was an exercise in working with actors in the way that I like to be worked with, mm-hmm, and speaking to them in a language that I appreciate as a performer. And so, yeah, that's how I've always approached it.
So you just had a big new game come out. Let's talk about.
I did.
Yeah, let's talk about Starfield, shall we?
Please, I like nothing more in the world than talking about Starfield. So
how long were you involved at the project?
So my first session was in October of 2019. Early sessions, you know, a couple of NPCs, they were, I think they were still, you know, building out some internal tests and things, mm-hmm, like that. Although I know they recorded some VO as early as like 2017, maybe even before then, before I got on the project. But, and then it was, you know, on and off a little bit as these things go, mm-hmm, as time progressed. And then I would say, I mean, things definitely picked up in 2020, which we'll talk about. But I would say by mid-2020, we were going almost every day for a year and a half.
Is that
years.
Like the dream?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I was joking the other day. I'm worried that I've peaked because I can't think of a more perfect job to have. You know, it's sci-fi, which I'm a huge sci-fi nerd. So it's subject material that I'm really super interested in, you know, narratively dense. Mm-hmm. Tons of characters. I'm working with actors all over the world, and you know, getting to do it for an extended period of time, for really 3.5 years I worked on Starfield.
Wow.
And so you get to build upon things, you know, that you found earlier in the process. It was such an exciting job. Yeah, I loved it.
And how did you get connected with Bethesda? Had you worked with them before?
Yeah, so I had worked with Bethesda. I knew some of the narrative designers already. I work for, primarily, one of my main clients is a studio called Blind Light Studios. They are wonderful people, some of the best in the business. And so I'd worked with them on Fallout 76 as well, which is a very fun game. And so that was kind of my introduction there. I got introduced to the folks at Blind Light, mm-hmm, through Kalel Bogdanov, who is such a lovely human being and one of the best VO directors out there.
He's amazing, yes.
Yeah. So shout out to Cal. Hey, buddy.
Cal, shout out. He's another Emersonian.
Yeah, that's right. So I had worked with some of the narrative directors, and of course, through Blind Light, was introduced to them on the Fallout 76 Wastelanders content. Mm-hmm. And then this was kind of a natural progression. It was kind of the next thing up So
yeah, well, with the Redfall in there.
With the Redfall, you know, it's funny. Actually, I think I came to Redfall after I had started working on Starfield.
Oh, wow.
Because I know Wes Gleason was the kind of the first chair, like the main director of that.
Of Redfall. Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. So I came to it a little bit after, and I think it was they had a big push of content and had to work a couple of different studios. So that's when they brought me on to that project.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Bethesda connection. Keep calling, Bethesda. So much fun.
So do you have any highlights from recording?
Oh, man, I do. So many. You know, not to get too into the weeds about it, but, you know, we did record the majority of the project over the pandemic. And it was the first month, April of 2020, or March of 2020, really, everybody freaked out. Everything was very scary and very new. Mm-hmm. And I feel like voiceover especially really quickly went, wait a second, we've got workflows in place for this. You know, we don't have to stop down. We can continue producing things. Let's get busy. And then it got really, really crazy busy, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was really fortunate to work through the pandemic, but...
And were you guys in studio, masked up and everything?
I mean, not until the very end of things. My wife was pregnant at the time. She gave birth in August of 2020.
Wow.
So, you know, we were very, very...
Pandemic babies.
I know, right? Gotta save the world, those pandemic babies. So... We were very, very hesitant to do anything because we wanted to keep him safe.
Sure.
Even after the vaccines came out, we stayed pretty locked in for a long while. So yeah, subsequently, I was just working from home, you know, over Zoom as we met. And
we met in person though, didn't we?
When
we
for Redfall?
Yeah. You were in studio.
I can't remember.
Yeah, I mean, I was just one of the townsfolk.
No, I remember. I remember that.
I know I was in studio, but I think you were there too. I think we met face to face that day.
I might have been.
I might have tried to go in for an awkward hug. Bye. No!
I'm all about the awkward hug.
You know what?
I don't remember.
It was sort of right before the game came out.
Okay. Oh, okay. So that would have been later on then.
Yeah, it was pretty
in the process.
It was right. We were recording stuff for the promos too.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Okay. I was back in studio by then. We were able to get Declan his shot. Declan Joe. Declan Joseph. But for the most part, it was me at home on my computer and actors at home in their closets or in studio, but, you know, everybody else is remote.
Yes.
Which was how a lot of work was done, especially, you know, as things progressed.
Yeah, but that's how it was with Spider-Man too.
Yeah.
We were in studio, but the only other person there was in a different room, and that was just the engineer, and everybody else was on Zoom.
Thank God for the engineers. They kept everything going. Unsung heroes of the business. But long way around to answer your question, one of my favorite things was Starfield had so many different actors and was truly an international cast. And so I got to work with talent in New Zealand, in South Africa, in Spain, in Turkey, all around the world. And that was such a fun part of the job, was getting to meet all these people in all of these different places. Mm-hmm. At a time where you felt so isolated and alone, it was a way of engaging with community that I don't know I would have had the opportunity to do otherwise. So that was one of the coolest parts of the job for me. Yeah.
I can definitely relate. It was such an isolating time. That's the whole reason this podcast got rebooted.
Sure.
Was because it's just an attempt to feel more connected.
Something creative you can do and talk to people and remember that people are out there.
Yeah. Remember me.
Yeah, it really was. And so that was, and then, you know, you throw into it having a kid and the isolation that's built into that, you know, the first few months, you're really just locked in anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was nice to be able to engage with the world outside a little bit.
Yeah. Now you have so much experience, and I'm going to say behind the wall, as well as behind the mic.
Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about some of your acting projects. You did Voltron.
What a dream. What a dream. I still remember, look, I'm a millennial of a certain age. And you know, I grew up watching Voltron. You know, I had the die-cast figurines that were impossibly heavy. So here's something that is being rebooted that I'm a huge, you know, fan of already and have such a love for. And to get to work on that was insane. It was so much fun. And then to also get to work with Andrea Romano in some of her final sessions.
Wow.
Because I came in very late in the recording. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she retired a few months after I got to work on it. And,
wow.
You know, it was a couple sessions and it was a dream come true. It was so much fun.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I mean, truly legendary. I've taken workshops with her, but I never had the chance to work with her, sadly. Although she'd make a great guest on the show.
Absolutely.
Call. Yeah, so how did that audition for that come about?
You know what? I got it through my agent, Sandy Schnarr, sent it over at AVO. And I remember, because it was a voice match for a character that Norman Reedus had done in the first season, but for whatever reason, he wasn't able to return. So they were casting for a voice match. And I thought, I don't necessarily sound like him, but I don't necessarily not sound uh-huh. like him. You know, I always kind of approach stuff like that. Not that I'm not versatile as an actor,
yeah.
but I kind of sound how I sound. You know,
mm-hmm.
I've got enough range to get by with, but I really try not to get hung up in the sound
the
of
mimic.
Everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, especially for voice matching stuff, I'm either a fit or I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I listened to some of the stuff that he did, went back and watched the episode a couple of times. And, you know, more than anything, just tried to get a feel for Rolo, for the character, and just, you know, who is he? Where's he coming from? And make sure I nail that.
Yeah.
And then if I sound right, then I sound right.
Uh-huh.
You know? And so I did the audition. I felt really good about it. It was one of those that you send off and you're like, you know, hell or high water. I kind of did a good job with
yeah,
that.
I should
and
feel good about that.
Exactly. And then you kind of let it go. Then yeah, I got a call from the agent saying that I had been cast and it was...
Great. Direct to cast?
Yeah, it was.
No callback.
It was. No callback. Just direct to cast. And, you know, I think it worked relatively soon after that. And had a couple of other, you know, couple pickup sessions. He wasn't super present in the episodes, so he kind of popped in here and there mm-hmm. on a couple of the final episodes of that season. So,
oh, what a treat.
It was so much fun.
And now you also have a son.
I do.
A young son.
I do. 3-year-old.
3 years. Has he watched any of your cartoons?
No, not yet. Not yet. He's a little young still. We're a Bluey Daniel Tiger household.
Okay.
Right
yeah,
now.
Sure.
With some Sesame Street thrown in, but that's about his scope of pop culture. So, but someday, yeah, for sure. I'm looking forward to showing him that and playing games with him. I love games. I'm not the hardest core gamer out there, but I really
enjoy it.
It's
hard to find the time.
It is. I mean,
you really need a lot of time.
Especially, you know, now with the kids. So,
are you playing Starfield?
I am. I'm playing it super wrong, though.
You're just exploring the world.
I probably spent the first 20 hours just like walking around New Atlantis, one of the main cities, just going, oh, so that's what the tree looks like. I was close. I knew it was big, but, or, you know, I was way off on how the Sanctum Universum looked. That is not what I thought of at all. But I got a lot of joy out of that, but we're just walking around and, you know, just experiencing more concretely things that I had to, you know, come up with kind of whole cloth in my imagination
sure.
to contextualize for actors for
uh-huh.
so long. It was... And still is, because I'm still very early in the game, taking forever. But it's so much fun to see what those things actually are and kind of, you know, rewrite those images in my head. It's a blast.
You're like, they did that wrong.
I haven't hit any of that.
No.
Haven't hit any of that yet.
So what is your process like when you find out you're going to be directing on a project? Do you get the full script? Do you get all the assets that sometimes are withheld from voice actors for confidentiality reasons?
Yeah, I get as much material as they will give me, you know, and that varies from project to project and really session to session, depending on what they have, because, you know, you've experienced it. The world of voiceover in general, but video games specifically, moves really fast.
Mm.
It moves really fast, but it's also super prolonged and slow. So like, you know, it's hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. And then you wait, you sit on something for a year and a half because you can't talk about it because it's out of our hands.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're implementing everything and animating it and coding
because unlike a prelay animation, the voiceover doesn't always come first. Like Call of Duty,
right?
We recorded and the game came out within 4 or 5 months because I guess...
That's crazy.
Insane, right?
Yeah.
Because the way that it was designed, they you know, they were just... they already had all the movement and everything. And it was just like for the players, it was like plug right in.
Yeah.
So it seems like it really varies.
It really does. You know, there's no one way it all happens. And the amount of work that goes into building a video game is insane when you start to really zoom back from it. What we do is such a small piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. But as far as materials go, I try to get my hands on as much as possible if I can get full scripts. I've got one client that I work for that all of their internal scripts come in like a screenplay format.
So that's cool.
It has you know, all of the line, it's broken up into scenes. All of the lines are together so you can see exactly what is being said and you can kind of choreograph the scene in your head, you know, the responses and all of that. There's even some stage direction sometimes. They know how they want the camera to move or whatever. So that is so super helpful. Mm. I'm all about specificity. Just get as specific, drill down to the nth detail. And so the more of that stuff that is accessible to me, the better, right? The more I can kind of pregame and create some spaces for performers to do their job.
So take us through the process of when you first find out you're directing a game to completion.
Yeah.
Hey guys, this is Allison Packard. Sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to let you know that if you like the show, please, please, please remember to subscribe to this podcast and leave us a review on iTunes. It really helps us to get heard by more people. Thanks so much.
So I will, you know, get my holds or whatever. I'll build out my calendar. Typically, I'll have at least a week. Again, it just depends on project and session, but usually I'll have a week or so.
Typically.
Yeah, right. To get some materials to start going through, to ask questions. It's always nice when there's a little extra time because, you know, I can kick a question back to Blind Light and they can run it up to the designers and maybe we can head some stuff off at the pass before the session. But yeah, I'll just kind of look at a script from perspective of each character I know I'm going to be recording. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the joy of directing work for me is I really try to approach it as I would as an actor, but you get to do so much more because it's everybody, right? And you get to kind of see interactions, see things that pay off down the line. So you're able to build more specific moments in knowing what's coming ahead or what the other characters in the scene are going to be reacting to or how they're going to be reacting. You can set up little breadcrumbs for later sessions to pay off, which is super fun. So yeah, I try to approach it from my first read through is always just story. What's going on? Who are the people are, you know, that are here? Mm-hmm. Where are we? If I have, you know, kind of bigger top-down information, more all-encompassing kind of narrative information, then I can contextualize what's happening in the scene within the greater kind of story that's being told. You know, like with Starfield, you know, I had a ton of kind of lore that was already built in because the game comes at a very specific, you know, point in time. But there's all of this history of humanity from when humans left Earth to the present day. There were wars that were fought and factions that coalesced and, you know, all of this great stuff that happened.
Backstory.
Exactly. You know, the world building and history of it. Get as much of that as possible and then just start drilling down. So this is all the stuff that has happened beforehand. Mm-hmm. This is what's going on now. This is how this specific faction or group or place, you know, plays into all of that. This is how this specific person within that faction group or plays into that role or against that role or, you know, what their position in the world is.
How do you keep everything organized?
That's a really good question.
Seems the scope is so big, you know.
You know, we have talked privately about ADHD. Mm. I have ADHD, and I think it is actually a superpower for me as a director because I'm able to take in a ton of information.
Yeah.
Because I'm always taking in a ton of information.
Uh-huh.
So if I am actively engaged in a project, like working every day on Starfield, all of that stuff is just still at the forefront of my mind because I'm hyper-focused on it and living that all the time. You know, it also, I will say, having a background in theater is really, really helpful because the skill of memorization, and as an actor on stage, you have to synthesize a lot of information kind of in real time because, you know, it's always...
A little different.
It's always a little different. There's always, you know, you're always searching for that spontaneity in live theater. But you also know as an actor on stage, you know, okay, I have to cross here and I have to be here by a certain time because this is going to happen. And then, you know, there are cues. You have to wait for the audience, you know, if you're lucky, to laugh. All of these things that you have to juggle as a performer, and just the skill of memorizing lines, you know, is training your mind to hold on to information, a lot of information for a short-term period of time.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so I've always found that really useful. There's a great actor, Richard Horvitz. Do you know Richard?
Yeah.
Richard is one of my favorite people in the world. He's a great coach, a great mentor, and a good friend. And Richard talks about this idea of primary and secondary reality as a performer.
Okay.
So primary reality concerns, I am an actor. I have lines. I have blocking on stage, to use the same example. I've got all this information that I, as the actor, have to deal with, right? But secondary reality is I am a person in this story that these things are happening to, and I have to be present and know who I am, know how I would react. It's the character of Allison is sitting here talking to the character of Tyler, and we have this interaction. We're reacting off of each other. That's all secondary reality stuff that's happening within the world of your story.
Uh-huh.
As performers, we have to hold both of those things in balance. You got to hit your mark, but also you have to be fully present
Make
and
it believable.
Truthful, right? And
it's
just
not easy,
react.
Folks.
It's not easy, but it's very easy. If you can get out of your way and let yourself do it.
Yeah.
So it was a little tangential. But, you know, primary and secondary reality stuff. I have a lifetime of work balancing those things. Mm-hmm. And so with directing, when I'm directing, it's very much the same work. I know what I need out of a session, you know. Primary reality, I got to get 230 lines out of a four-hour session. And how are we going to do that? Well, a lot of it's combat, so we can kind of rush through that. But also, the secondary reality concerns, I am trying to help my performer react truthfully in a world that, honestly, you know very little about coming into a first session. So it's my job to contextualize and build those moments for my performer so they can do their job. I'm a very collaborative creator. I really believe strongly in collaboration. And that's why I think it's such a compliment to be called an actor's director or a performer's director, because that means I'm doing my job. It's not film directing. I don't have all the logistical stuff to have to deal with. I don't have to worry about camera angles or lighting or, you know, any of the kind of all-encompassing stuff that film directors or TV directors do. I really am allowed to focus on my relationship with a performer in the session. I've got a great engineer who's going to handle all of the other stuff for me. I've got a project coordinator who's taking notes and keeping things on track. So really, my focus is on the actor and being there for them in whatever capacity they need me to be.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. I love it.
So you mentioned other forms of directing. Have you done any mocap or performance cap?
I have not, and I am super interested in it.
Yeah.
Because I see such similarities to stage work in it. You're taking it out of the kind of imaginary work that we do in voiceover into building pictures and really creating an environment that is fully realized in a way that, you know, I try to do as much as possible in the booth. But it's so much more tangible in mocap and PCAP. I'm super interested in PCAP. I can see spending a lot of time in the next couple of years, like really trying to figure out that nut and getting
Have you ever done any PCAP?
I haven't. I haven't.
It seems like a tough cookie to crack. I only get a couple PCAP auditions a year. And I hear from a lot of other actors that they're not really seeing those opportunities. Do you have any advice for voice actors that might be looking to break into PCAP?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think more than anything, do live theater. Get used to being fully in your body. as a performer and using that as a tool for your performance, right? Do it in the booth too. My favorite actors are really, really physical in the booth. It helps so much.
Yeah, but it helps you believe yourself.
Well, it does. And like, again, the more into your story you are, the better it's going to feel and the more fun you're going to have and just going to fit together very nicely. But yeah, so just get used to being in your body as a performer. And if that's doing some work on stage, if it's taking a dance class, if it's, especially if you want to, you know, do any sort of stunt work, to take a martial art, get used to intentionally using your body in a way that assists you as a performer.
And there's also PCAP and MOCAP workshops that are out there.
For sure. He's probably going to be annoyed at me blowing him up, but the only guy that I like to send people to is Noshir Dalal, and he only teaches every now and again. It's not a regular thing for him, but Nosh is one of the finest actors I've ever worked with. He is so specific in everything that he does. And
so funny, as you just said that, you made a Nosh face.
Did I really?
Yeah. Okay. It was like you were channeling the way he talks sometimes.
You know, he has that effect on you. Nosh is a great guy. He's a great guy. His heart is in the right place. Mm-hmm. He teaches from a place of actually wanting to help people, which I think is important. And so I'll recommend Nosh, but more than anything, just vet who you're thinking of studying with. Ask friends what their experiences were. You know, just do your due diligence, because it's a tough world out there and there are a lot of people that will take your money.
There are a lot of good opportunities, and as an actor, sometimes it's hard to afford every single one. And some of the opportunities are more golden than others.
That's right.
Perhaps.
Look at how diplomatic we're being. I'm very proud of us.
I mean, I actually have heard of a fair amount of PCAP, MOCAP workshops that seem really good. And I had a friend that took one that he got a great piece of tape from. So that was pretty cool. But although it seems like when the auditions come, you know, an on-camera reel is just suffice as well. But they do tend to work with the same people that they know can handle it.
Yeah. Again, it moves super quick. You have a day that you have to get. And also there is, well, especially with the stunt stuff, right? There's the potential of getting hurt. There's danger involved. And so I would imagine you want to be relatively sure that the person you're hiring can handle it and can give you what you need in a safe way and do the job. And when you find those people, why not keep working with them?
Now, are the same people that are casting for VO Blind Light and, you know, the various intermediaries between the devs and the actors, the casting people, are they the ones that are also casting PCAP, or is it other specific PCAP casting?
That's a really good question that I don't really know the answer to. I would imagine that the process is relatively the same, but that's kind of an ignorant guess at it. Not having done a lot of it myself, I don't really have a great peek kind of behind it.
We got to get somebody PCAP next season.
Yeah. Get Nosh here in here.
Yeah, Nosh was going to come on a couple of years ago, but it's, you know, he's not often in town, so.
He is, and he's busy. Yeah. He's a busy dude.
Yeah. But someday.
I'll lean into him. I'm coming for you, Nosh.
Well, so I know we have just about 10 minutes left.
Okay.
And I wanted to just kind of talk to you a little bit about the potential impending video game strike,
which
may be happening, and just kind of, you know, hear your thoughts on the whole situation.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we're seeing a lot of labor movement, you know, hot labor summer and all of that. And I think more than anything, there are a lot of developments in the industry right now, you know.
Technologically
and business model. I mean, streaming is a totally different business model than, you know, anything that the TV theatrical, you know, division of SAG has seen. And so I think we've been riding out a lot of old contracts that are predicated on old business models. And here we are in 2023 and the game has changed. And so I think the time is now to figure out where we are as an industry, where we're going as an industry, and how we as performers can get caught up.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk about video games, we struck in 2016, mm-hmm. 2017. That was a lengthy strike. And
how long did that strike go? Do you know?
It was several months. Mm-hmm. 7 months? Was it 9 months?
Wow, that is long. I can't recall.
I can't recall either, but it was a while. And, you know, we came out better than we were before, but I think there was still a lot left on the table mm-hmm. in that negotiation. That contract was up in 2020. Mm-hmm. What happened in 2020 that might have kept us from another contract? I can't remember. Something big happened in 2020.
I got a new shirt.
That's what it was. Agreed, I think very reasonably, to just renew that contract at the time. Mm-hmm. It was up in 2022, is that right? November of 22, something like that, was when that contract expired. And they've been renewing on a month-to-month basis, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, ever since. It's time to deal with it.
Yeah.
It's time to deal with it. I think I know a lot of good people on both sides mm-hmm. of those negotiations now. I think that, look, eventually there is common ground to be found. Mm-hmm. You know, I should say, I'm speaking from far outside of any sort of negotiating panel. I don't have any more information than anybody else mm-hmm. out there. But, you know, I think if the TV theatrical contract gets figured out and the money
hopefully soon
gets figured out, mm-hmm. hopefully soon, hopefully this week, mm. I think that starts the ball moving pretty quickly on the other negotiations. Mm-hmm. I hope.
Yeah.
You know, the major difference.
Some of the studios are the same.
Some of the studios are the same. And you got to think that that's holding things up, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine Warner Interactive is ready to kind of jump out on the front line when TV Theatrical is still negotiating. So I think that's probably part of what's holding it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. The other big difference is AI, usage of AI is already really prevalent in video games. Mm-hmm. It's kind of baked into the process.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, the way characters interact with each other, or, you know, the domino, the chain of effect of one thing happens here, and then so that, you know, generates all of this other stuff, you know, down the line narratively. Also, procedural generation of environments is a real thing. And that's generative AI being used in an artistic way.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the process. And so I think the language around what is generative AI, mm-hmm. how does it translate to performance,
mm-hmm.
and then what safeties and securities can we put in to make sure that consent and compensation is mm-hmm. being fairly dealt with. I think really of any of the negotiations going on right now, not to downplay what the writers went through or, you know, what TV Theatrical is dealing with, but I think it's a more complex issue with video games than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So
because the sake of we may be the voice, somebody else may be mocap, somebody else has designed the character. There's so many people that make one person in a game.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, again, these generative AI processes are already built into the collaborative effort of making a game.
Mm-hmm.
So let's pick that apart, find out, you know, which ones directly affect us as actors, and make sure that, to be diplomatic, to make sure that the developers can still use these practices and these tools to do what they need to do to make a game, but to make sure that they are not being used in a way that is taking advantage of performers.
Yeah, well
said. PCAP, mocap, I mean, you talk about that, it's very relevant to them, you know, mm-hmm. because they are performing the movements that these characters who are being led by AI, they're providing the movements that are built into that. So, how much of that is their performance and how much of it is what you're generating as AI? And even if you're generating new movements based on stuff that they laid down in their session, don't they deserve to be paid for that? And I think the answer is yes, you know. And so all of that needs to get figured out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I am glad that's not my job.
Me too. Me too. Mm. It's above my pay grade, for sure.
So what's next for Tyler Rhodes?
What's next? That's a really good question.
I mean, you're running off to a session right after this.
I am. So you're very busy. Getting to work a little more, which is always exciting. Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's funny. We met on the picket line a couple weeks ago. Yeah, last week. It was last Monday. Oof.
Yeah.
And you had asked me something about like a balance between acting and directing or where I see myself in that whole scope.
Yes. As a multi-hyphenate, I know it can sometimes be challenging
to have
multiple balls in the air.
It is. But, you know, it's all in service of the same thing, which is this business of collaborative storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I hope to just do as much of that as possible. PCAP, MOCAP is a world I'd love to get into. Mm-hmm. This is not a plug, but I also do my own coaching and like workshops and stuff like that.
Great. How can people get in touch with you for that?
Yeah. I head to King of the Roads Creative.
I'll put a link. We'll drop a link in the box.
Beautiful. And I'll list anything that's going on there. It's also got contact information for me. And like, I'm opening Pandora's box here, but write me an email. I'm very accessible and almost always down to just meet for coffee and chit chat. You buy me coffee, you get a lot of this happening. So
it's very generous.
But I do all of that because I just love working in this industry so much. It's all I've ever wanted to do. I've somehow found a way to make a living doing it.
Cheers.
Cheers to that. You know, the more of that I can do, the better. And a way of engaging with that is one-on-one with actors. Mm. You know, I love watching actors make choices. Mm. It's so exciting. Again, one of my favorite things about directing is I'll do all of my research. I'll do all of my, you know, my analysis and my prep work for a session. And then I'll come in and inevitably I'll be working with an actor that makes such an oddball, like out of nowhere, hard left, where I was making a nice gentle curve right. But you look at those moments and you go, is that supported by the story? And if the answer is yes, that's the most exciting thing in the world, because a creative person saw something that you didn't see and surprised you. And that's so exciting to be a part of. So in my coaching work, that's what I love about coaching actors is I get to watch actors make choices. And in a different way, you know, a way that I don't get in sessions, I can explore that. Oh, where did you see, you know, how did we see that in this? You know, you can kind of roll back the tape a little bit and dive in and get into the process of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm a nerd for that kind of thing. So, yeah.
Well, May 2024 can bring you continued prosperity doing what you love, and for everybody else out there as well.
Same, same.
Tyler Rhodes, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today.
Allison.
It's been lovely getting to chat with you. Everybody, thank you for tuning in to Allison's Wonderland. If you haven't already, make sure that you're subscribed so you can get updates. This, I think, is our last episode of season 3.
Awesome.
So we're going to take a little hiatus and we'll be back for season 4. So thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you on Instagram. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to Allison's Wonderland, where we explore the wild and wonderful world of animation and video games. Please remember to subscribe and leave us a review. For more episodes of Allison's Wonderland, please visit us at www.allisonpackard.com. See you next week.